So the letter of Paul to the Philippians, chapter 2, and verses 12 and 13. Work out your own salvation with fear and trembling, for it is God who is at work in you. The climax of that hymn that we read together is that Jesus Christ is Lord. Jesus is Lord Messiah. Jesus is Lord. The earliest, the shortest, and probably the best Christian creed there is. Jesus is Lord is a key to a door into a new world for all those who came to faith in Philippi. And it's the key to a door into a new world for anybody else, for you, for me, who comes to faith as well. Jesus is Lord. It's an invitation to a new way of seeing ourselves and seeing the world around us. An invitation to a new way of seeing our past, of looking to our future, and a new way of how to live in the present moment. But as Paul writes to his friends, if a new world is opening up for them, there's a lot of exploring to be done. And he writes to the church that he helped to found. He's absent from them now. He writes to thank them, as we said, but he also writes to ask how you're doing and to give them some pointers in Christian living. Work out your own salvation, he says, with fear and trembling, for it is God who is at work in you. John Wesley was a very prolific editor and a prolific writer. And one little book he wrote, it was called Explanatory Notes on the New Testament. It was designed, he said, for serious people who do not have learning. So they didn't know Latin and Greek and Hebrew, but they wanted to come to get to grips with their Christian faith. And it's always worth dipping into, because some of the comments he adds to his own translation, based on the authorized version, but he does say he's improved it in some places. It's always worth looking at some of the comments that he makes. And he comments on these two verses. Work out your own salvation is the end of verse 12, and it is God who is at work in you is the beginning of verse 13. And on the footnote to the words, work out your own salvation, his footnote is, here is our duty. And for the next verse, God is at work in you, he says, here is our encouragement. So our duty and our encouragement. Work out your own salvation, but it's God who's at work in you. Let's turn to our duty first. Work out your own salvation. And let's put fear and trembling on one side to begin with. Work out your salvation in fear and trembling, says Paul, which is meant to be positive. Fear and trembling is quite a standard phrase in of the Bible. In other words, the Bible that Paul knew, because he didn't know he was writing the New Testament, did he? The New Testament hadn't been invented then. In the Bible, in the Hebrew Bible, fear and trembling is often used. And it's true that at times it's the equivalent of the phrase that I heard living on the other side of the Pennines. I don't know if they say the same in Yorkshire. Think on, think on. If you're dealing with God, just be aware of who you're dealing with. But more often than not, fear and trembling and the fear of God is an invitation to be part of God's people. There's one verse that says, fear God and love him and serve him and follow him. Become part of God's people. Fear and trembling so that you may, Paul goes on to say, you may, God is at work in you to will and to work for his good pleasure. If you approach God with that sense of fear and trembling, you've got to be prepared to put some work in to receive that gracious gift from God. You remember the children's story about the little red hen? The little red hen and her animal friends, she said, who will help me prepare the soil? They said, no, thank you. Who will help me sow the seed and raise the crop and harvest it? No, thank you, don't want to help. Who will help me bring in the grain and mill it and bake it? No, thanks. Who will help me eat this delicious bread? Oh, yes, they're already there. They have the will, but they weren't prepared to work. And when Paul says, work out your salvation with fear and trembling, he means be prepared to do something about it. So we can put fear and trembling on one side, as it were, as though we've taken it to mind. But how does Paul imagine we work out our salvation? There's a sense in which the church at Philippi is in a similar situation to the church here in Easingworld in the 21st century. There was a sense in which they were under some pressure from the people outside the church, but they weren't being persecuted. They weren't being persecuted by the authorities. They weren't being challenged by a Jewish community within the city, because it doesn't seem as though there was a synagogue in Philippi. They did have some problems from people outside pressing home some Jewish-related concerns, and you'll hear about them next week, spoiler alert, they're in chapter 3. But they weren't being persecuted. But if you go back to Acts chapter 16, the earliest days of that church, the complaint against them was that they were advocating different customs. They're not like us. They're different. They do things differently than we do them. And I wonder whether that may be one way in which we can work out our salvation in the 21st century, to make those differences clear, to say by our lives and by our words, it doesn't have to be like that. It could be like this. As you look around the world of today, as you bring your courage to the sticking place and turn on the news or read the headlines. Oh, so many things are different from the way we would want them or God would want them to be. In terms of relationships, whether it's relationships between nations or relationships between individuals, so often it seems to be a case of, what's the term, a zero-sum game, that I have to be in the right and you have to be in the wrong. But it doesn't have to be like that. As we look around the world, so many people seem to want to contradict Jesus' teaching and say that, yes, our life does consist in the abundance of our possessions. But it doesn't have to be like that. And the thing that keeps coming back to me time and time again is that the way that at the click of a mouse, tides of bile and hatred and incitement of violence can speed the way around the world in an instant. So that houses in East Belfast are set on fire and the flames fanned by people thousands of miles away. One of them by the name of Mr. Musk, of course. It doesn't have to be like that. And if we can work out our own salvation along those lines, we know Jesus teaches us a different way of living. That itself is a powerful witness. The candle says to the darkness, I beg to differ. So that's one way of looking at how we work out our own salvation. What's the aim of doing it? What does Paul want to happen as a result of that working out? One thing he wants to bring about is unity. Unity in the church community. Last week, at the end of chapter 1, you would have heard an invitation to unity in relation to the world outside the church. But here in this section of the letter, Paul's talking about unity within the fellowship. He loved this church, but it wasn't quite as he wanted it to be. I have no idea why. Later in the letter, he singles out two ladies and names them and begs them to resolve their differences. But we don't know why, we don't know what the matter was. It could be, as it very often is, it could be something very absolutely trivial. Do you remember in one of Alan Bennett's Talking Heads, the very disillusioned wife of a vicar saying, if you think squash is a competitive activity, try flower arrangement. It could be something as small as that which blew up into something big, and Paul wants that to be done away with. Work at unity inside the church. But the other aim for Paul is that they can achieve, grow to that unity and grow more together. Their witness will be the greater for it. He's not calling them to an inward looking sort of unity, just navel gazing. Apart from anything else, and this is something I always have to remind myself in reading the Bible, in English, you is singular or plural. More often than not, and here certainly, Paul is you, is everybody. work out your salvation. Work out your own, because your salvation is different than mine. God calls us to different things, but work it out together. Work out your salvation. Not so that you can feel comfortable and cozy together and keep everyone else at arm's length. Because he goes on with that, to point that, paint that lovely picture of, if you do that and let God be at work in you, then you'll shine like stars in a dark sky. Now, I've never lived in a part of the world where the stars shine as bright as they would have shone in Philippi in those days, before light pollution was invented. I think you have to travel to the North York Moors, don't you, for the nearest dark sky reserve to us here. But if you did go there, or if you did travel back in time to Philippi, the stars would have been bright. And not only the light that shines from them, it's by the stars that people then and still today can navigate. People can find their way by the light that these stars give. And if you shine a light, says Paul to his friends, then you're following Jesus' word. Let your light so shine that others can see. So, work out your own salvation with fear and trembling. He's not with them. So he's saying it's all down to you. Except he's not. Because in the same breath, he goes on to say, for it is God who is at work in you. It is God who is at work with you. They could work hard within the church and relating to the world outside the church, but without God as part of it, where would it go? They'd be forgetting the lesson of the vine and the branches, as John in his gospel remembers Jesus saying, apart from me, you can do nothing. But if God is at work in you, then things become possible. It could become possible if God is at work in me, for me to be able to say, well, now I understand more about prayer than I did this time last year. It should be possible for me to say, I understand more about listening to God in the world around or in other people than I did 12 months ago. It should be possible for me to say, I know now how to be closer to God than I did 12 months ago. And I'm looking forward to learning those lessons even more in 12 months from now. It should be possible. It doesn't always work out that way, does it? At least for me. Kingsley Barrett was an internationally recognized biblical scholar, great part of the great tradition of Methodist biblical scholarship. And he wrote, and I've never forgotten, the hand with which I hold on to God is a trembling hand indeed. But the hand with which God holds on to me will never let me go. I mentioned earlier about Wesley's notes to the New Testament. Work out your own salvation. Here is our duty. God is at work in you. Here is our encouragement. And this is what he goes on to say. Here is our encouragement. And oh, what a glorious encouragement to have the arm of omnipotence stretched out for our support and our succor. And if that's true, what isn't possible? What isn't possible? The early Methodists in the 18th century were encouraged by Mr. Wesley to believe it was possible to grow in grace. They were invited to look towards, as he sometimes called it, Christian perfection, which I find a rather unhelpful term. Another way in which he described it that I find more helpful is perfect love. He encouraged them to grow towards a place where every attitude and response, every thought would be filled with the love of God and directed by God's love. They are strongly encouraged to do that. And some people said, yes, I've already arrived at that point. And Mr. Wesley was very keen to have a word with them. And he wasn't always impressed. But the point about those early Methodists was not that this or that or the other person claimed to have reached that point in Christian living, but that all of them were looking towards it and hoping for it and working out their salvation with fear and trembling, for it's God who is at work in you.